I don't have anything to tell someone. Okay. Because if I tell them, it implies that I know what you should be doing. And I'm more of the, I've had this conversation. Everything that I do then kind of breaks down into a sales process, but I am very, very much the sales tactician. And I am also not someone that commits sales malpractice. I don't come in and tell somebody, here, you have this pain, take this medication. That if I tell someone to do something without getting a full understanding, a full discovery, I got to see the tests. I got to see the x-rays. I got to have you go through that panel of tests so that I understand where you are, and then I could possibly prescribe something. So while there is medical malpractice, I do not commit sales malpractice.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network. I am here today with Mike Bellin. Mike, what's up? How are you today?
Hey, good morning, Ben. Nice to be with you.
Always a pleasure to chat with you. I'm excited for what this conversation holds because you're a sales and leadership development coach, an executive growth strategist for Naker Consulting, LLC. Good stuff, man.
So
we're going to talk about sales. We're going to talk about leadership. One thing that you and I talked about offline today is people glorify the end destination. And you have had an incredibly successful career, and you're an expert on sales and leadership. But it wasn't always that way, was it? Let's slow down to speed up. Where did you get your start in this industry? And I'm just going to broad stroke question, kind of give you the floor. Where'd you start? Tell us a little bit about your story, Mike.
Well, that's interesting that I had absolutely no intention or no background in or the idea of being in sales. I actually, for anybody that wants to look at my LinkedIn profile, I am a former minor league baseball umpire.
Okay,
that was my dream, you know, in my early to mid 20s to be a major league umpire. And I umpired 6 years of minor league baseball while working my way up, going to umpire school and working a couple of years of high school, college ball. I needed to do something in the off season. And oftentimes the only thing that I could find was some low level telemarketing sales job. I worked for Dial America, renewing magazine subscriptions. I sold Kirby vacuum cleaners. It was just something that I needed to do. Well, in the off season, I needed to it needs to be a little bit better than just, 10, 12 bucks an hour. And I found that I, got good at sales and kind of graduated my way up from telemarketing to inside sales and then moved into a real, big boy version of a sales job, and then moved into outside sales, sales management, sales coaching and training. And it just kind of happened that way and realized that, all right, maybe I can do this. This is what I understand. And I had a passion for it.
I love that. You said got good at sales. Break that down a little bit. It's not like you rolled out of bed and were the top producer in the room. Maybe you were, and you were just charismatic and perfect, but how did you get good? Was it mentorship, training? Where were you, and how did you get to this level?
Yeah, it was all of the above. I was thinking a little bit about today in our conversation, and that I had good coaches. I had good trainers. I went through periods in my career where I was uncoachable, where I just wanted to do it my way because I thought that I knew better. And, that's a bit of a humbling gut punch experience to realize, hey, I thought I knew what I was doing and I should have listened to somebody else. So getting good at it, whether it's sales, anything that you do, is just being coachable. You know, somebody else out there knows more than you do about something. So just zip it, listen a little bit, and then put those things into practice. Apply what you're being taught. And I had the benefit of learning from some good people that kind of steered me through early stages of my career. And even today.
I love this. I'm going to grab the pencil, Mike. I've got my big pencil here. We're diving into actionable real quick, and I love that. You mentioned being coachable. I've got the pencil ready. I'm intentionally talking slow in case someone needs to grab their pencil or pen. What are a couple, you know, tips for anybody in sales, business development, entrepreneurship? At the end of the day, we're all in sales in some sense, right? It's persuasion, it's influence, it's getting the job done. What are a couple tips you would give to someone who feel like they might be struggling, but they are coachable and they want to learn more?
So coachability, it's a big thing for me. And I'm going to work my way to that answer in a second. That oftentimes my clients will ask me to interview candidates, especially sales candidates. And I ask types of questions that kind of draw out what I'll consider like the coachability factor. How have you handled problems like this in the past? What have you learned from your experience? Everybody's had failures. Great. I want to hear about those failures, but not about I failed and I quit. It's I failed and here's what I did. Here's what I learned from that. So coachability for me kind of navigates into and dovetails into a learnability factor. What did you learn from that bad experience? And then really the ability to listen, to reassess, apply what you've just been taught or coached or learned, and then do it a little bit differently. Do it a little bit better. Take a step back. Take a step forward. Just that ability to listen, to look yourself in the mirror and say, okay, here's what I need to apply differently today.
Now, what are some of these things that we can start applying? Feel free to even share a place where you were struggling or you failed, and maybe what you were taught and what you applied. I know personally, I'm a let's go do it. Let's apply. I'm going to take notes and I'm going to take action today, Mike. What are some of these strategies I can start applying that maybe aren't too far in the distance for me to accomplish?
You know, that's an interesting question, and it depends on the industry and what you're doing, what you're looking to achieve. But I think that I treat a lot in life like a sales pipeline. Like, okay, start from the beginning. Take that anatomy of a sale. What does it look like at the beginning? Whatever it is, your goal is, whatever your mission is. Okay, hey, I want to lose 20 pounds. Okay, great. You don't just walk into the gym and start losing 20 pounds. All right, I'm going to change these specific behaviors. For a sales process, sales operations. Okay, what does the beginning of that look like? Who's our ideal client? What are the problems that they're going to bring to the table? And I'm telling this in the metaphor of a sales process, but that really, I think, can be applied to whatever you do in life. Start with a plan. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm totally stealing this expression. I think it's from Gary Vaynerchuk. You know, big shout out to Gary V, but reverse engineer the strategy. Have that dot on the map, have that pin in the map of where you want to be, and then work your way backwards to say, if this is where I want to be 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years from now, here's what needs to happen 5.5 years from now. Okay, well, in order for that to have happened, this would have happened first. Okay, great. In order for that to be achieved, that milestone goal, that benchmark, all right, that would have been, and subsequently backwards, and then say, here's where I start. But have your end destination in mind.
Begin with the end of mind. I think that's what Stephen Covey says. Begin with the end in mind. Reverse engineer. It's a great thing to steal because it's so true in life. We begin with the end in mind. Then we can reverse engineer to get there. Okay, so we jumped around. I kind of want to go back because you mentioned being an umpire, and I want to bring up Naker Consulting. Are you still an umpire today?
No, the last game I ever umpired was September 2004. I made my way up through the minor leagues pretty quickly, A-ball, AA, AAA, And after a season in AAA, it was not a good season for me. I realized whatever it was, I didn't have it. And I knew it. I knew that that wasn't the case. I knew that I didn't want to, live my life chasing the dream of the minor leagues. And after that season, I just said, I'm done. And I don't want to do this. I don't feel like I'm good enough to get there. No, don't umpire anymore. Called and asked a couple of times, like, hey, well, I work, some college baseball, I've given it some thought, but I'm like, that is a chapter. Not only did I close that chapter and book, I kind of tossed that book in the recycling pile, like that's it. That was back then, and haven't stepped on a baseball field. The closest that I get is cheering for my kids in Little League.
Hey, that's close enough. And that's a beautiful thing. This is a personal just curiosity of mine. When you're a professional umpire, but you're not in the majors, are you like the same team every single time, or do they have you traveling across the United States? What does that lifestyle look like?
It's the latter, that as an umpire, you're assigned to a league, and there are, especially in the minor leagues. Now the structure's changed a little bit, but back in the early 2000s, you're assigned to a league, and there are 10, 12, 14, 16 teams in that individual league and that level of baseball, and you travel amongst the cities in that league by car. And then as you get up to AAA, there's some air travel in there. But you see the same teams semi-regularly, but no, you are independent of the teams. It keeps that level of separation. And doesn't bring it, not the ability to favor anyone. You have to be impartial, have to be neutral.
Yeah, it's massively important to be impartial, because now with Twitter and the internet, you're going to get a lot of hate if you're not. But that's all beside the point. So you said 04, you stop with the umpiring. Were you were full time in sales at that time?
Shortly thereafter, so I cut my teeth in sales in the Yellow Pages industry. Okay. I know. What's the Yellow Pages? Well,
that's the big book that you can start a fire with, right?
Surprisingly, phone books don't burn that well because they're so dense. I tried that at once, almost symbolic, brought it out camping, and you'd think that it would burn well. It did not. Maybe I should have put it on at the end instead of trying to start it. It's not one of those starter logs. Who knew? But cut my teeth in the Yellow Pages industry, and that industry changed early on in my career there. So that was 04, fall of 04. And over the next few years, it quickly moved into more and more and more digital. And the industry and the company had to make that migration from print Yellow Pages to the digital and multimedia marketing.
Got it. And so nowadays you're with Naker Consulting.
Yeah.
When did that transition happen? What led you from that, growth through digital to Naker Consulting today? What walk me through that? And then the follow-up is going to be a little bit about what you're doing today and who you serve today.
Yeah, that was a bit of a rocky road, Ben. That was not a fun journey along the way, that I had moved from inside sales to outside sales, a small stint in training and managing an inside sales team. Learned a lot along the way. I was my first 6 months as a sales manager. For anyone that may listen and watch, I was terrible. I apologize. I had very much that mentality of, here, this is the way that I did it. This is how I was successful. Do it my way. And people did it my way and said, your way doesn't work. And I had to reassess.
Talk a little bit more about that, and we'll continue. But, there's a big difference between a individual producer and a leader or sales manager. Talk a little bit about that difference. So you're a rock star individual producer, but as a sales manager, it wasn't necessarily as easy as you thought it would be. Talk a little bit more
about that. it not only was it not easy, it was hard because, and you know, and oftentimes I, you know, I make a sports metaphor in here, but I don't know, maybe a year or so ago, I put up a post on LinkedIn that was the lesson of Ted Williams. And quickly I'll say Ted Williams, arguably greatest hitter in baseball history, longtime Red Sox, numbers that even including the time that he lost in World War II and then in Korea, that had he played during those years, may have had numbers that were that would never be touched. Mm. For his career, Ted Williams, who was the single greatest producer at his job, was a sub 500 manager. And his last year as a manager had the worst record as a manager in baseball. His team finished last because his problem was that he couldn't understand why people couldn't hit like Ted Williams. Well, no one could. And I'm not comparing myself in the sense of Ted Williams. I wasn't that great of a hitter. But the skill set that it takes to be an individual producer are not the same things that it helps others to succeed. You have to remove yourself from that, you know, that eye of the tiger, take the kill shot mentality to, hey, I need to help people be the best versions of themselves, not some sub-rate version of me or somebody else, and not model my behavior, but what is it that you want to achieve? And that's where it kind of coaching and leadership development comes into play to say, hey, it's not about me. It's about you. What do you want to achieve? And how can I help you do that?
100%.
It was a tough lesson to learn, but I learned it. Thankfully, I think I learned it early enough that I could right that ship and kind of get back on the course that I charted.
I can imagine it's a tough lesson. So you do inside sales, outside sales. For anybody who's brand new to sales, let's just tackle this real quick. The difference between inside and outside and your experience with both.
So inside, very basically, you know, you are pretty much tethered to a desk, a cube, you know, phone, computer, and all the sales interactions that you are doing is over the phone, is virtual. With outside sales, there's a little bit of, yeah, you have to make some phone calls and appointment, but you are face to face. It is the, you know, the handshake, the pen on paper, you know, sign here, press hard three times, you know, bringing that back, going out hunting and bringing the feast back to the den. I've been asked before, what do you like better? And there are elements of that that you can meaningfully touch multiple people a day in an inside sales role. But there is just something to be said for sitting across the table from somebody, sitting shoulder to shoulder, showing them, they're looking at what you want to see. You're reading their body language. You're hearing the noises in the room. You're picking up all the factors of what's going on around you, getting a sense of I'm here, I see it, I see what's happening. Now I can make my best recommendation. I guess it's the difference between, you know, telemed and getting the patient in your office. You know, you need to see that and feel that. So I liked inside sales better, but there was something to be said for being face to face in the same presence with somebody.
Absolutely. And every listener is going to have their own style of where they're most comfortable. I know personally, I started my career in inside sales, and not only were we not having virtual conversations, it was literally over the phone. Mm-hmm. Then we would do screen shares. And I was kick ass at it once I was comfortable. I was very good at what I did. But then I moved to an in-person environment. There's no closing your eyes and thinking. There's no screen share. There's no, you know, maybe tapping your foot a little bit because you're nervous, because all the body language cues are there. So it's a completely different skill set to be able to rock and roll in person. But then I know a lot of people that can rock and roll in person that can't captivate somebody over the phone. So yeah, it's an important distinction to make.
It's while the end goal is similar, it's just two different ways to reach your audience. And you said that you have to be able to capture their attention, where in a meeting, you could, if you wanted to, physically reach out, tap them on the arm, making sure, point your eyes, hey, look at this. But you have to hear those cues, and you know, in inside sales and telling over the phone, like, hey, do you hear someone talking in the background? Did you hear a dog? Did you say something and it took 3 or 4 seconds for them to respond? Okay, then you probably lost them 20 or 30 seconds ago if they're not immediately responding to. But and you can see that in person, but you have to learn to listen for those cues and recognize when they come up and how to get them back on your track again. So both help one another. But I like being on the road. I like being face to face.
Yeah, you're a people person. You're a charmer. Between you and I, it was hilarious. One time I was on a phone call with somebody, and I just hear them typing like faster than I can type, like vigorously typing. And I just stopped talking. And she goes, "Hello?" And I'm like, "I think this phone call's done." This was back when I was a little feisty. I was new. Yeah. And she's like, "What do you mean?" And I'm like, "You're typing over me the entire time." And it got, but listening to those cues. So the reason I bring this up is sales is more than just, you know, technique. It really is understanding human behavior and listening, as you said. So you get better and better at, you know, both ends, the inside and the outside. You become a sales manager. You maybe fall on your face a few times. You start getting better. I kind of broke down and we kind of lost the story. So you're a sales manager. What was the next move? How did this all lead you to the Naker Consulting role you're in today?
Yeah. So this is a little bit of a meandering road. There is no straight line here. This is kind of a ball of string. The company that I was working for at the time that had gone through a couple name changes, but it was, you know, rooted in Yellow Pages. They made the decision to close their local inside sales office. They moved those operations out of state. So I had a couple of choices. Either I go back to outside sales, you know, put the bag back on my shoulder. And I felt like I'd kind of graduated out of that. That wasn't really what I wanted. Or move out of state, you know, with Chris and the kids. At this point, you know, we have, you know, small children, and that conversation lasted for about 0.4 seconds. That was never gonna happen.
Yeah.
And I just said, okay, you know, based on the time that I was there, I was able to, you know, I had a little walking away money, a little severance package, you know, so it kind of bought me a little bit of time. And at that moment, I swore, that's it. I am out of advertising and marketing. I'm not doing this again. So I kind of did nothing for about 6 months and foolishly thought like, okay, we're going to be fine. Have some money. I don't have to rush into this. And a month turned into 2 and 3 and 4. And then at 5, and now my wife's getting a little antsy. I'm getting a little antsy. And I took a job with another very large multimedia company, one of the largest companies in the country, working out of their Syracuse regional office. But I was reporting to Syracuse, selling in Buffalo. And even though I was working from home, that was my first day-to-day in a while working from home, but trying to sell Buffalo businesses on why they wanted to do advertising with a Syracuse-based and New York City-based company. And after a little less than 2 years, hating myself, feeling like I sold my soul to the devil, I didn't want to do this in the first place, that story didn't end well. I was unhappy. I was physically unhappy. I was mentally unhappy. I was unsuccessful in there, which started out really successful. Then a couple things just went awry and hated it. Hate it. Couldn't believe I swore I wasn't going to do this again. I said, so now here's, you know, back to the baseball metaphor. Strike one, company closes. Strike two, that wasn't a good business decision. Dovetailed right into a personal connection, connected me with a local Buffalo company, and went into an industry that I was a little bit unfamiliar with at the time. Good people, great company, Buffalo based. And that lasted 4 months. That was not a good decision.
Can I add to the analogy? I almost feel like strike one, strike two, then, you know, 5 or so months of not doing much. And then you decided to bunt You basically gave yourself, you gave yourself up for the team. You gave yourself up for the team, man.
Yeah, it was a couple of kind of desperate decisions to say, like, I just want to get something. You know, went through a bunch of interviews, interviewing with people. And I mean, no disrespect to anyone at all, but I was interviewing with people knowing that I was 5, 10, 20 times more qualified to do the job that they had interviewing to report to a person like that. And just saying, what am I doing in my career? So here's the interesting, and you didn't ask, but I'll take us down this path.
Please.
Why would you do this? So mutual connection kind of introduced me to somebody, a local, you know, Buffalo business guy, and got into a conversation about, so, hey, he told me your story, you know, between me and you and me, what are you doing? And I explained kind of like, well, I went here, that closed, you know, took this job. I didn't want to take that job, took this job, didn't want to take that job. And there are words that he would say. And if they grab the pencil, and this is the moment, this was the earth shattering, core rattling moment for me. And he said to me, leaned forward in his chair, looked at me and said, how many more times are you going to let this happen before you choose to do something different? And I was just like, yep. So shortly thereafter, I had a meeting with Jason Pearl, Naker Consulting. He and I met a few years ago, right around for a different, I actually interviewed with him for a different company, turned the job down. I still don't know why I turned that job down. Don't know why, but glad I did. And he and I met for coffee. He was about I can't remember if it was a year or 2 years into after having started Naker, and made it for coffee. It turned into lunch. And about halfway through the meeting, I said, okay, what's it take for me to come work with you? And he said, well, okay, that's interesting. It's interesting that you say that. So let's talk this through. And it was a couple of months of, okay, well, you know, sure, but you know, you're going to have to bring on some of your own clients. You're going to have to find somebody that is, you know, I'll kind of help you through that. But this isn't something where, okay, hey, you take a job and I just hand you, you know, a book of business, you know, that you have to bring something on. And the right situation popped up and I was able to, you know, put together a good contract where I was contracted to come in and do some sales consulting and strategy consulting work for another company that built onto another company and added another client and added another one after that. And it just, you know, now 3 plus years into this, I couldn't imagine myself doing anything else. I'm the happiest professionally that I've ever been. And hey, there's been some fluctuations in there, and I'll take the next step in this to say, this was in fall of 19. So I went on a run that was about the best 6 months professionally at that moment that I'd had.
Wow.
And then we reach March of 2020 and had that, oh, what have I done? wait a minute here. You know, one, I just brought on a new client and they had to kind of pull out. They were, Mike, sorry, but we can't use you anymore. We're going to have to close our offices. People are working remotely. Like, we don't want to breach a contract, but we can't do this with you anymore. And it was a tough run for about 3 or 4 months. But what COVID proved in there is that, hey, you have to be able to sell through resiliency. You have to be able to, you know, work through remote conversations. And I was able to kind of insert in there. And it's been a very good 2 years since.
That's fantastic. Was there,
that was the long story to the short question.
I love long, in-depth answers to simple questions, because anybody can pick up a book and learn sales strategies, but really what we need to do is get in the weeds, try different things, fall on our face, strike out, take one for the team. And by you telling your story, maybe I can gain some insight where I don't have to make all the same mistakes or all the same struggles, and I can actually speed my way up to success. So COVID hit, and obviously everybody went through that. You're like, oh my gosh, what just happened? I was on fire. Now people might be dropping out. It's hard to fulfill these contracts. I know personally, I was furloughed. The product I was selling and marketing was video production, and it was nationwide. Mm-hmm. So there was no in-person video. There was no travel. There was no sales. There was no fulfillment. So I have no animosity. I was furloughed because there was no purpose for me. So the world exploded in front of our face. Was there a time where it started to pick up again? Was there a time where you're like, phew? Like, at what point did things start to pick back up and you regained confidence?
It was probably around August or September of that year. So it was probably that 4 month stretch, April, May, June, July, maybe 5 months. And then, you know, there was an opportunity that came to us, someone that, company that we had met and, a couple months prior, started giving some advisory, consulting to them. And then, we were able to pick up and move a little bit further with them. And then I ended up spending probably almost 2 years working, with that company. It was about a 4 or 5 month stretch, but by September of 2020, it was okay. It was a little lean, tightening the belt, you know, working to kind of make ends meet a little bit professionally. But it was okay. Yeah. All right. Things are picking back up again.
Yeah. So yeah. Things pick back up. Now things are more normal. It's almost like the new normal. I think it's crazy to think that the world's back to normal. There's definitely major changes that have put in place. But part of these major changes, I get to have the Zoom call with you. A lot of people didn't know what Zoom was 2 years ago. So I think it's fantastic we can have this conversation and people can listen via audio as well and watch us via video. Who are you guys serving today? Are you serving little old Ben, who's a sole proprietor? Are you more working for larger organizations? Talk a little bit about who you serve and how you get to serve those people.
Yeah. So a couple things in there, and I've described myself as industry agnostic. I don't really care what the product is, what the service that you sell. I don't care what you sell. To me, it doesn't matter. Within reason, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But no selling ice to an Eskimo. That's not
a thing. No. That based on what you do, what your business is, you have, you know, you what you do, and an audience that needs to understand, you know, what they can be doing better. So I've kind of stripped out, you know, any sort of industry that I worked with a couple manufacturing distribution companies, worked with a software company, worked with a technology product, home office, business office product company. I worked with a sole proprietor. When I say sole, it was really this individual and had a handful of people that did things there. But it really is, hey, what do you want to accomplish? Now, Naker as a whole has a much broader spectrum in there, but I'll speak to the clients that I personally service.
Cool. Well, tell us the Naker broader perspective. You kind of left me on a cliffhanger. Does Naker tell me a little bit more about Naker as a whole then?
So we are sales strategy consultants, growth consultants that companies have a vision in mind, back to what I said before, that they have a place where they need to get to. And oftentimes that destination is, you know, a $10 million plateau, $100 million plateau, whatever it may, not plateau, peak, I should say. That's the benchmark. That's what we want to get to, but the road looks a little rocky. Not quite sure how to get there. And I mentioned earlier that, you know, kind of like doctors, that someone comes and says, hey, I have an ailment, I have a pain. We're losing people. We've hired, you know, sales leaders that aren't quite who we thought that they would be. We've hired salespeople who looked good on paper and they didn't do well at the job. We're losing revenue and we're not quite sure why. COVID aside, we've plateaued. You know, we were on a trajectory, recession aside, and you know, we didn't get to where we wanted to go what do you see from an outsider perspective? And companies will come to us and say, hey, help us through this kind of choppy water here, this bumpy road. And in most cases, you know, with our clients, we have NDAs. So I'm trying to explain in general who we do, what we do, and who we work with. There are some that say, absolutely, hey, you know, sure, I'll tell you who they are. And some are, yeah, we're just going to do this quietly. So we are growth strategists. We help companies grow their revenue and build out sustainable, replicable sales success year over year over year and grow their revenue throughout that time.
Love this. And I totally understand NDAs, client privilege. I don't want to just start spitting out everybody's names. So I totally understand. A lot of the listeners are small business owners. They're entrepreneurs. They're maybe driven to start a business. Let's help them out. And I'm in that category. So I'm included. So I'm looking to raise my sales. I have an end trajectory. I want to work backwards to reach that. And here's the thing, guys, you can reach out to Mike. Tell us how to reach out to you, Mike. How do I reach out to you or Naker Consulting?
Okay, so Mike Belin, B-E-L-I-N. I'm mbelin at nakerconsulting.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I am not a huge, you know, social media person from the sense of, you know, I don't do Instagram. My wife gives me a hard time about that. But I'm often on LinkedIn. Email, I'm tethered to email and phone. But Mike Belin, at nakerconsulting.com, or hit me up on LinkedIn.
Awesome. And those infos it's in the description, it's in the show notes. So I recommend people reach out to Mike, have a conversation, have a 15-minute discovery call, jump on a phone call, you know, tell him what your problems are, see if he can, as a growth consultant, can help you reach that destination we're looking at. So I'm entrepreneurial and I kind of have an idea of where I want to go. What would you tell someone who's just kind of getting started with this that maybe doesn't have the funds in place just yet? What would you recommend to somebody? Like, what if I, even better, if I were to sit down on a call with you, what expectations would you want them to have already accomplished? Is there certain basic stuff? Learn how to swing before we learn how to hit a home run kind of thing, you know? What would you recommend?
Yeah, and that's interesting. And you know, kind of thinking that we might be talking about this. And the best answer in that is that I don't have anything to tell someone. Okay. Because if I tell them, it implies that I know what you should be doing. And I'm more of the, you know, I've had this conversation. Everything that I do then kind of breaks down into a sales process, but I am very, very much the sales tactician. And I am also not someone that commits sales malpractice. I don't come in and tell somebody, here, you have this pain, take this medication. That if I tell someone to do something without getting a full understanding, a full discovery, I got to see the tests, I got to see the x-rays, I got to have you go through that panel of tests so that I understand where you are, and then I could possibly prescribe something. So while there is medical malpractice, I do not commit sales malpractice. Mm. So I wouldn't tell anyone to do anything. It would really be a discovery call. Hey, okay, tell me what you're doing. How has that worked? What have you done before? What is it that you're looking to achieve? I ask someone a lot, why? Why is this important to you? How have you tackled something like this before? What has been the change in this business, this career, this strategy that is prompting you to say, hey, you know, my knife may not be as sharp as I need to cut through what I want. And I've described myself often as I'm a sharpening stone. You're going to be the one that's having the conversations. You're going to be the one that's going to be cutting through those things. I'm just here to help sharpen those skills and get you on a path that you want to go on, not the path that I pre-prescribe for you to go on.
You're the sharpening stone. You're the guide. You're there as a facilitator, a consultant, but you're not here to be like, this is the playbook. This is the diagnosis. Do this and I can guarantee your success. we both know it's not that simple. Talk a little bit more about why you have that perspective. It sounds like quite literally every single conversation is tailored based on a business's mm-hmm. size, scope, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit why you've adopted that perspective.
So in doing what I do, in doing what we do, we are a custom strategy company I've joked a few times, and forgive anyone that's listening that's heard me use this before, but I am a big toolbox. I don't walk into someone's office, take my toolbox, dump it on their desk and say, pick which one of these out that you think that you should use. Because oftentimes when that happens, that somebody's trying to hammer in a screw. And you could beat that screw all day long with a hammer and you'll destroy everything in its sight when all you need is that small Phillips head screwdriver to say, perfect, that's what you were looking for. But without understanding what screw they're looking to put into what wood, I can't walk in and just say, just do this. Now, I'm going to take this a step further.
Please,
that doesn't mean that I leave that all under their control. And one of the things that oftentimes I have to do is tell someone, hey, you are the problem that you're looking to solve. And I don't say it that strongly, but I will if I need to. You're looking to get to this point in your company, in your career, in your trajectory, but you are the person that's looking to sprint, but I'm watching you put hurdles up in front of yourself and you're complaining, why do I keep knocking over these hurdles and not jumping over them? Just sidestep them. No one said that you had to be a hurdler today. If you want to sprint, just do this, do these things. And it's based on what I'm seeing. And it's really a custom set of recommendations, not a do the Mike Bolin playbook and this will be successful. Now, hey, there's core tenets of what I focus on, but it has to be customized.
Yes, we talked about this. There's inside sales, there's outside sales, there's B2C, there's B2B, there's a long sales process. There's, you know, I'm walking in and I want to buy a mattress today. That's a far different sale than someone who's in a complex sale. So yeah, I appreciate you bringing this up because a lot of people like to create a playbook. I actually have nothing wrong with that. Taking a playbook and then creating an audible based on what's needed in that scenario. Mm-hmm. But to have a playbook, to have a prescription and just apply it to everyone is what did you call it? Sales malpractice. What was the term you used?
Yeah, exactly. That, and I have for clients built a sales, operational sales process, playbook. I think I've actually called it a playbook to say, okay, hey, I've been with you now for 2 or 3 months. I have a good sense of what you're looking to achieve. That'll often be kind of written into utilizing CRM, a whole different conversation, but to say, hey, here's what the playbook looks like, that in order for it to graduate from the 10% lead stage to the 30% discovery stage, these if-then scenarios would have had to happen. Okay, great. If this happens, then it moves on. If it didn't, then it moves back. And that's really kind of that playbook. And you mentioned, and I use sports metaphors so often, that, hey, the play comes in from the offensive coordinator. This is what we're going to do. But we see something different and say, whoa, hang on, alert, audible, call something different. Now I'm going to pivot based on what I see happening at that time. And that's the advice and the recommendation that I give to clients, to say, we set out on this path, but that's not exactly what we saw something different than we were expecting to see. So we need to be nimble enough to say, let's sidestep this hurdle and work through this instead.
100%. It's we're on the same page, Mike. I know as a marketer, sometimes something works and I'm like, why did that work? And well, let's call that a trick play.
Mm-hmm.
Something works, and even if it surprises you, let's audible and let's run that play. Let's readjust based on what's working mm-hmm. for this business in this industry in this circumstance, because it's not always what we expect it to be. that's part of the fun. I'm going to assume, tell me if I'm wrong, you don't really have that many boring days with clients because it's something new and fresh every single time.
No, boring is not part of my business day or week. There's always something to achieve. And oftentimes, really, with sales, it's a, you know, it's a number. There's a number that has to be hit. You know, I have a particular client that has a very, very lofty, realistic, but lofty business goal. This is what needs to happen year over year over year to sustain the company, to continue to grow, to continue to fund, you know, bringing on more people, bringing on more machinery, bringing on important things that they need to grow. But we need to hit a number. And, you know, that standing up and doing my dance and working through some of the challenges on hitting that, it is never, ever boring.
Never boring. This conversation wasn't boring. It's lit me up. We're going to close out with the rapid fire round, Mike.
Short All right, answer let's questions. Do it.
Some are either or, some are fill in the blank. No time on it, but we want to keep them quick. We want to keep them fun.
Okay.
I often start with coffee or tea.
Coffee, absolutely.
Favorite furry animal?
Dog. We got a little, you know, a little rescue mutt. Oh. I'll go with dog.
Well, what's the mutt's name?
Marty.
Marty. Say hi to Marty with me. He's been quiet today.
We had to put him in his crate to make sure he likes to bark at dogs and squirrels and chipmunks. So, you know, so I didn't want to put you through the gamut of editing sound out today.
Yeah, I've got two old ladies, Hazel and Raven, and they have been pretty quiet. They were loud right before the call, but they're good.
Fingers crossed.
Morning person or night owl?
More morning.
What is one of the prouder moments of your sales career or career in general?
It's sitting down, having that conversation with Jason Pearl. That was a migration away from, you know, I am the product of blue collar union parents. You know, my father was a factory worker. My mother was a postal worker. My stepmother worked in an office. My stepfather too. But I had that kind of Buffalo Niagara Falls based blue collar. And so my way as a child of learning is that you trade, you know, hours for dollars. You go in, you literally punch the clock and punch in, punch out, and then you get your paycheck and you know what that is. And to be in that entrepreneurial mindset to say that, hey, my dollar, my paycheck is driven by the success that I bring to clients. It is a very, very different mentality. And it takes some getting used to say, hey, I really have to dance for my supper, you know, on a weekly, monthly, annual basis. And I love it.
I love it. I didn't know that about you, Mike. One thing is I wouldn't say dance for my supper. Dance for my supper sounds like you might be doing something different, my friend. That's beside the point. So give us like a cheap investment that you've made throughout your career, like a cheap investment that most people can afford that really helped you and really helped you level up in some kind of way.
So, Audible. I'm an audiobook nerd. I often find myself that, you know, I thought you might ask the question that I'll say this here, you know, Audible versus paper book. For me, it's both. And oftentimes it starts with the Audible. And then I say, hey, I don't want to go back and listen to it all the way, but I want to be able to have that as my personal little sales PDR. And say, I'm going to keep that there. And I got some right there that I want to go back and reference to it. So I heard something in the book, but then I go back and pick up the book and highlight it. So Audible. The other thing is right back there too, is a ring light camera for situations like this, so that I can at least not be sitting in the dark having a conversation with you over Zoom.
Yeah, I mean, sales are now virtual. Having a good presentation, a good camera, good audio, good virtual presence. A lot of us don't like that. We'd rather be in person, but it's a common necessity these days, isn't it?
Yeah.
And for anyone listening, I like to give the guests some of these rapid fire questions so they aren't stumped. So that's kind of what Mike's referring to. One of them that has stumped people, but since I know you reviewed it, I hope it doesn't stump you. Three people live or dead that you'd love to share a meal with, share a drink with, talk sports, hang out.
So this is going to reveal why it was not a good weekend for my family and I. One is Dan Marino. Would love to sit down and have a beer with Dan Marino. I would really like to meet Jesus. To find out, like, hey, what's going on, man? You know, what happened here? What's happening in this world? And interestingly enough, Barack Obama, I find his story very, very interesting. And just to be able to sit down and say, hey, kind of walk me through your career, your journey. But for me, and if it was ever to happen with Barack Obama, it would be shooting around in a little basketball, that I always remembered him as, playing basketball with the Secret Service. So, conversation with Jesus, beer with Dan Marino, and shooting basketball with Barack Obama.
Double part question, Mike, how tall are you? And do you think you could beat Barack?
Absolutely not. I'm 6'1". I enjoy playing basketball. I can't say that I'm that good at it, but the fact that at 49 years old, I can still get up and down a basketball court for a couple hours. I'm a little sore the next morning, couple Advil, but I don't know if I could beat my soon to be 10-year-old son in a game of 1-on-1. So if anybody has any skill, you got me.
If you're a 10-year-old, you got a lot of endurance. I remember being that age and really annoying the heck out of my father because he was bigger. He would post me up. He would put his butt in my face and make it difficult. But I would just run and try to steal it from him, and I'd try to wear him out. So 10-year-olds, man, that's a lot of energy. Probably keeps you young.
I got started a little late in life. So, that I mentioned my age, that my children are 13 and soon to be 10. In a couple of weeks here. I got to keep up, got to stay with the kids. So yeah, keeping me young, hopefully.
Any final thoughts, words of inspiration, anything we didn't touch on that you want to leave the audience with? Knows a fine answer, but just want to put that on the table if there's something we missed.
Yeah. I think that always be a lifelong learner. Find something new to learn. And it doesn't have to be in business. That learn, learn about wine. Get a book about wine. You enjoy wine? Take a deeper dive into it. You like cooking? Take a cooking class. You want to learn more about, sales or sales operations or coaching? There's a plethora of books. There's libraries full of books. Amazon can have something to you in 2 days. Just find a way to learn something new today about anything, personal, professional. Learn, be a lifelong learner.
Love it. We'll leave it at that, Mike. So happy you came on the show. Anyone listening, if you could leave me a review, if you enjoyed this episode and made it to the end, that's incredible. I read every single one of them. So if you want to kind of just like make me feel good about myself, I'd love that review. And even better, it's not about me. It's about Mike and how he's serving this world, serving a collective impact we're creating here. Reach out to Mike. Mike, tell us one more time the best way someone can contact you, even if it's just to make a friend.
LinkedIn, Mike Belin, B-E-L-I-N, or mbelin at nakerconsulting.com. Just send me an email. In my email signature, I have a Calendly link. I found that you asked about investments. That was a good investment to skip the back and forth. Are you free on Tuesday? Are you free on Wednesday? And how about this time? I'm happy to have a conversation with somebody. Even if at the end of that conversation, if we part ways friends and I say, hey, I'm not the one that can help you, but maybe I can make that introduction to somebody that can. But email, LinkedIn, and if we need to have a 15, 30, 60 minute conversation, happy to do so.
Mike, one thing that came to mind is you mentioned always be learning. And I'm thinking, what's the worst that could happen? You jump on a call with somebody, you learn something new, you part as friends. Mm-hmm. The worst that could happen is you learn something new and part as friends. So I encourage people to do that. Whether it's with Mike, do it with everybody in your network. Spread the love. And thanks, Mike, for coming on. Again, man, it's been a great conversation.
Appreciate it, Ben. Thanks for the invitation. Glad I could do it.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.